Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Happy New Year, and happy Syracuse won a basketball game against a power opponent.
Not just day, one, like really one.
One pretty, I mean, I actually like got a little nervous at the end just because like I've watched this team and they started doing some stupid stuff, but like they were up almost 20, so it was like a minute and a half. So like the fact that I was even like half worried, which is dumb, but like, yeah, they were just in a team. Like Miami's 11-3. They're what, 28th? If there was 28 spots in the poll, they're like the third receiving votes. Like they're a pretty decent team, and Syracuse won convincingly. So what is this team?
Right, I mean, and that's the problem for fans, for media, anybody. If you're following this team, you literally have no goddamn clue what you're watching anymore, because at least to this point, through 14 games, we had okay, this is Syracuse against bad teams, well, bad non-power teams, and this is Syracuse against power conference teams, and there was a very clear difference in guard play, in defense. Now we have this outlier. Now we have to see, like, you know, how long can this level of play stick around? Obviously, there were a couple differences tonight. You saw Lydon at center, which seemed to help on both ends of the floor. Andrew White had his probably best game at SU. He had a double-double. And the fact that really, you know, outside the one guy whose name I can't pronounce, shooting three is for Miami, I feel like their offense was pretty much kept in check. These are all things that we didn't really see a ton of in any other game against a power conference team until this point, at least.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple moments where Miami got hot. They actually shot like fairly well from three. 11 for 26 is pretty solid. They were actually, I think, a lot better than that. I think they were 9 for 20 at one point. So they you know, kind of came back to the pack a little bit down the stretch in the second half when Syracuse put it away after Miami had tightened it up. But yeah, it was a classic, like, you know, you had the one guy go crazy. He was 6 for 12. All of his shots were from beyond the arc. And I actually just looked up. He actually has had like a 17-point game before this year against South Carolina State. And he had a couple other double-digit efforts, but he is averaging 6.5 points a game, so we probably should have known that he was going to have a nice game going in.
Oh, yeah, he is very... I tweeted this during the game, too. He's very much your typical, you know, randomly gets hot from three and hits between 6 and 8 from outside against Syracuse. I know the Miami blog at SB Nation and State of the U actually warned us about him, but I had my eyes on Davon Reed, given the fact that, you know, he plays more, he has hit more threes, he is a scorer in general for this team, he's second leading scorer on the team. So yeah, I definitely did not expect him, well, did not expect this individual, who, again, can't pronounce his name, that's my own fault. Dan, you want to give it a try? Vasiljevic.
Vasiljevic, I think that's pretty good.
I'll take it. We'll just call him DV for the rest of the podcast.
That's so mean.
But I can't do it, and instead of insulting him the entire time,
we're gonna call him DV. I guess it's better than the never mind.
Oh, Christ.
We're going first name first. This is, you know. Oh God. Yeah, I mean, the rest of the team didn't do much aside from him. I mean, no one else was in double digits. The rest of their roster, I think, was 5 for 14 from 3, which, you know, isn't awful, but not, you know, what you need to do to beat the zone unless you're carving it up. And they really didn't run, like, a really great zone offense outside of that, which we've seen Miami actually do pretty effectively in years past. Even when they were outmanned in terms of talent, Miami's actually played Syracuse really close and have played, like, their effective own brand of zone. And this was actually it was almost comforting, because we know that it's a team that in the past has faced the zone and played effectively against it, and tonight it really didn't. So I don't know if we're like ready to declare the zone back on and working effectively, but it was I think it was a team that we all really needed to see, even if it's just like the first step up a very steep mountain that we are climbing now.
Very much agreed. Yeah, I mean, said Lydon at center certainly helps. I was just looking around the box score to see like some of the hallmarks of a good Syracuse game. Free throws, always good. 12-14 there for Syracuse. And I saw that Miami had a very Syracuse-ish performance of their own at the free throw line, 2-for-10. They hit a lot of threes on the Miami side, but we shot well enough. We shot well over 50% from the floor, which is all positive, and we out-rebounded them by 4. These are all, again, things that Syracuse seems to do quite a bit when they win games, and it's just the first time this year, at least, that they've been able to put all that together against a power conference team, and a decent power conference team for all intents and purposes, at least from what we've seen so far.
Yeah, and I mean, we even had it wasn't even like a perfect game or anything. It wasn't like Syracuse was firing in all cylinders. Basically, six guys played, which, remember a couple months ago, we were like, oh, there's 10 players and we don't know who's going to sit. Your answers are Frank Howard and Daywon Coleman, and obviously Chukwu was hurt and wasn't playing much anyway. But like Torian Thompson, who's been probably one of the best players in that bad stretch going back 2 or 3 weeks, was effectively a no-show. He hit his only shot, but he only scored 2 points. But it was, you know, the guys you expect. Lydon had one of his better games, went for 20-7. White had 22-10, actually. He's like one of those guys. He's like super quiet when he has his big scoring outputs, but he's had a couple nice games in a row. And then Dylan Battle, you know, even when Dylan doesn't give you a great night, clearly Howard just, for whatever reason, Howard just some nights does not have it at all.
Well, Howard's not going to play a minute for the rest of the season.
It wouldn't shock me at this point.
Howard has officially replaced. I mean, I thought Roberson had owned the dog. I thought we renamed the doghouse for Roberson. Based on how Howard's played of late, I feel like Howard might not play another minute.
I'm not ready to totally. I mean, Howard's definitely in there. I think Roberson might be sitting on top of the doghouse like Snoopy, but so I'm not totally ready to like remove him from the doghouse because he has such a long and glorious history with it. But Howard is definitely like entrenched in there, and it's just a matter of if he's like the only inhabitant right now or not. But it is nice to see Robe has actually made like a really nice bounce back after it was like he looked like a guy that Boeheim never wanted to see again like what 3 or 4 games ago, yeah. And he's, you know, he's back out, he's not starting, but and I don't think he will. I think we kind of know the starting lineup now. I think it's pretty clearly the 5 with Thompson and Lydon. It's probably the 5 most talented players in the team, to be honest, and the 5 most effective scorers. And then Roberson, you know, maybe this is his best role. It's a come off the bench energy guy who will grab some rebounds and kind of shake up the balance of the roster versus what we had earlier in the year with Coleman and Roberson, who were, you know, neither of whom is a dynamic offensive threat and definitely not, you know, well, both have shown a little bit more range in the past. Like, the 5 that we're throwing out there now can all really step out to 18 feet, if not further, and hit jump shots. And it's just more of a dangerous lineup. Probably one that we thought would be more of like a unique, specialized lineup, but it's the one that's been working best by far in the last couple of games.
No, I completely agree, and you bring up a good point there. Like this was kind of like a novelty lineup, and given the fact that we did have, you know, Chukwu and Roberson and Coleman, like, I didn't think, I know we talked about it a little bit in preseason, I didn't think we were going to see much of Lydon at center. You and I were even talking and said, you know, Lydon's probably going to get banged up a little bit in ACC play if we put him up against, you know, centers in conference. But at the same time, it's not like there are some good centers in the ACC, but it's not like those guys really have a ton of physicality above and beyond what Lydon can do. And, I mean, no, Lydon is never going to be this big, bulky guy, but he can create mismatches and has created mismatches that we saw on both ends tonight. I think, you know, as much as it seems counterintuitive to put your 5 best offensive players on the floor to improve defense, it seems like that worked, Dan. And I mean, what else did you notice, at least, how that offense created defense or did it?
Well, I think with Lydon, it's interesting because while he's not a natural center in terms of size, like you said, in college, like, you can get away with a little bit more. And he has some decent size. I mean, there are teams that play centers that are about that big. They're just not as skilled as him, and they're maybe a little bulkier. But as a shot blocker, he's the best shot blocker on the team. And Thompson is probably up there too, which probably makes them a little better off at playing that position than your average 4 would be. But I think, I mean, the fact that Coleman's not a shot blocker, Roberson really doesn't have that in his skill set, And now on the other end, you can play a little more of an up-tempo style. And obviously Leiden causes all kinds of mismatches and spreading the floor. The fact that there's not really a better defensive option, it just makes it kind of a no-brainer at this point. We both heading into the season, we're hoping that, you know, I think we banked more on Chukwu being more than what he ended up being, and obviously the eye injury is going to keep him out. I don't expect to see him the rest of the year. I think we were hoping that Chukwu would be that kind of defensive stopper at 7-3, and maybe one day he will be. He's still a project. But for now, I mean, Leiden brings the shot blocking. He's fairly decent at avoiding foul trouble, probably better than he was last year. He's just a headier player, and he's a smart player, which is what we all grew to love about him last year. So I still don't think it's an ideal world thing, but right now Syracuse just needs to play the best lineup it can play. There's no benefit. We don't get a better draft pick if we tank the year. Like, it's right. The college basketball and college sports in general are very ruthlessly capitalistic. There is no benefit to being bad and in recruiting or anything. So they just need to go and be as good as they can the rest of the year. Even if it might be too late, and we are in the situation right now where it very well may be too late for this team to make the tournament, but they have to try. There's no other option. So throwing the best five, six guys out there and turning the rotation down four people from where you thought it might be a couple months ago, it is what it is. And we've seen Boeheim tinkering. He's tinkered more with this team than I've ever seen before, and we may be kind of getting somewhere with it. I still am not buying that this team is ready to go and like run the table and make the tournament or anything, but I think we have the closest we're going to get, and you know, hopefully this game is a sign of things to come, and at least hopefully we make it interesting down the stretch, and we'll you know, maybe shock some teams and see what happens going in the tournament. Maybe we could be like, oh, they're playing really good basketball, maybe they could win the ACC tournament and sneak in. So we'll see.
Yeah, I have to agree there. I mean, I'm not banking on them making the tournament. I'm not banking on them winning the ACC tournament. I'd love to see them win a game in the ACC tournament, I think. And, you know, I hope we're not getting sucked into another classic like, you know, I mean, again, this is an unranked Miami team. So I think, you know, in some ways, I saw a lot of people, and it goes to show how kind of, you know, how violently our fan bases, you know, expectations and opinions shift. To see all the same people setting the goddamn program on fire like 3 hours ago, you know, ready to throw another goddamn parade down Marshall Street. Like, it's odd. I don't get it. And I'm a part of a lot of fan bases. I know you are too. I'm part of, at this point, like 7 or 8 different fan bases that, and I'd say that Syracuse is still a unique one, especially on the basketball front, just how quickly people can be hot and cold. I think if this team can go 16-15, you know, keep the winning season streak alive and look respectable doing it, I just don't know how anyone could be angry about that, but I know a large portion of the fan base will find a way.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those rare things where, like, you know, people freaked out early, like after South Carolina and the UConn games, and then their freak out kind of became justified, but like, you can't then swing all the way back and say, oh, they're gonna like turn around and be something they're not. Like, this team just is deeply flawed. Now, you know, they could do something crazy down the stretch, and maybe they just pull off a bunch of wins and the record isn't good, but people are like, yeah, but look what they've done since, what's the date today, January 5th? Like, that's possible, but I think we really have to take it one game at a time, which is not a strength of sports fans in general, and
especially this fan base.
Definitely not Syracuse fans.
See, football, we've grown to learn. Basketball.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, no, for sure. I mean, weather was a part of it too tonight, but yeah, tonight's attendance was under 18. I know we saw last year, you know, the second thing started to head a little south for Mike Hopkins. Attendance was tanking under 18, so. I
mean, this year I have part-time blaming people. Like, there were, like, 20 there for that Saturday game, I think against, like, Colgate or whatever, and it was after we had a bunch of bad losses. Like, I struggle to really blame people for not showing up based on how this year started. Football annoys me more in that scenario, but either way, like, attendance, Syracuse basketball attendance, like, it'll be up and down based on the team, but at least you know, like, most teams will never even sniff 17 and can't even manage that, so
right.
It's what it is.
So yeah, Dan, I mean, what do you expect next? I mean, can we sit here and say definitively that, like, even if they don't win every game going forward, and they're not going to, that this team has figured something out? Is it really going to have to be wait and see? I mean, obviously, we have Pitt next, but it's Pitt without Jamie Dixon. If we win that game too, are the wheels back on, or are we going to have to wait until this is like 4 or 5 games into like much better and improved play on both ends?
I don't know. I mean, Pitt's not great, but they can score the ball. They don't play any defense, which it's weird. It's like a backwards Pitt team. I think if they beat Pitt just based on the name and the fact that Pitt has some talent, like they have Artis and Young back, it's a nice combo. I think those guys score like over 40 points to mine a team. I'll be willing to entertain the notion that Syracuse has like maybe figured some stuff out, especially with like tonight where, you know, obviously Miami game was fairly close until like halfway through the second half and then Syracuse put it back on. But I think it's way early to just deem like everything fits based on one nice performance, because we knew, like, as bad as things had been, like, we knew there's talent on this team, and odds are they weren't going to, like, lose out. So there's a chance things just flip tonight, and they'll go back to shit next week, or when's the Pitt game? A couple of days from now.
So Saturday?
Saturday, I think, yeah, Saturday at noon.
9 a.m. Pacific time. Screw that.
Oh, boy. Hope you're ready to wake up for that one.
I'm usually up at 6 a.m. anyway.
Fair. Yeah, I mean, if they beat Pitt, I'll feel pretty decent about things. And if they beat Pitt, though, like, you're still not, like, the damage has been done to the resume already. Like, you have to beat Pitt if you, like, want to start building things back. It doesn't mean, like, Syracuse is back or flip the switch. Maybe it's, like, an early indicator, but we're still, like, a long way from there. So it's a nice step, and obviously you want to beat Pitt, who's, like, you know, kind of a monkey on the back for this team every year. Even though it's now post Dixon, and the team looks completely different in terms of like style.
Even pre Dixon, though.
Yeah,
I mean, Howland,
I mean, but it was still the same.
Yeah, it was Howland and Dixon were kind of like this long stretch of just stupidity. But yeah, like, Dan, hear me out. Would something stupid like this happen? Let's say we lose to Pitt, but we manage to beat. Of the 4 games after that, let's say we go 3-1 against Vatek, BC, UNC, and Notre Dame. 3 of those are on the road.
Yes. Oh, that's an awful stretch. I'm looking at that now.
Yeah. Well, and then you look at, you get a 1-game break against Wake, and then you got to face Florida State. I mean, there are no off nights in the ACC, obviously, but we saw this stretch as difficult going in, but if we went 3-1 in that stretch, and I'm not even entertaining it right now, do tournament hopes come back into the picture? Because the good wins start outweighing the bad losses.
I think you can. I think we're back on like the radar. I think right now we're like off the radar completely. Right. I think if you get like, I mean, I'm assuming in that scenario you're beating BC. I don't know that we can pencil that in because, you know, we just watched that game a couple days ago. But yeah, so let's say we lost at UNC, but we won at Vatek, which is a very nice win. I think Vatek's really good. And we won at Notre Dame, which is always tough. And then we beat BC at home. And like, let's say we beat BC pretty handily, and it makes it seem like the damn couple, you know, the last game, the 96-81 game or whatever, was kind of a fluke, which I don't think is fair right now, but, you know, let's say that. Then yeah, I think, I mean, they still wouldn't be in the tournament, like, if it was to end, but I think then you're like, all right, they
13-7
with a couple of nice wins.
A couple of nice wins and a decent conference record. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to entertain tournament just yet because, again, all that requires a lot of things to happen. But, yeah, you look at the schedule, and we said this after every loss, the conference schedule allows you to redeem yourself. Now, granted,
yes.
Yeah, the BC loss sucked, but at the same time, I look at BC coming to SU just, you know, less than 2 weeks removed from the last game, and you figure that was BC's best shot. BC could not have played better against us than they did in that game. I think that's a
fair assessment. No, they went nuts offensively.
Like, I'm saying that's a fair assessment. So I guess, and you look at, I don't think Syracuse could have played much worse than they played in that, for, I'd say, 75% of that game. taking out the garbage time at the end when they were able to close the gap. So, I mean, to me, I'm not going to say Syracuse can just suddenly flip a switch and crush them, but we got DC's best shot. I'm curious to see what happens if SU can give them better than a 25% performance like the one they gave the other day.
Yeah, I mean, Syracuse is a lot more talented than BC. Mm-hmm. I'm not like in any way thinking, like, I don't think at all that BC loves up to the talent. I think they are an improved team from where they have been. And clearly, like, that game was just awful in every respect the other day. But Syracuse should beat BC at the Dome. So yeah, I think then in this situation, look, at 13-7 with two ranked wins in short order, and a revenge win against BC, and a 4-2 start in the ACC, it'd be 4-2 start in the ACC. Like, then yeah, then we're starting. Basically, what Syracuse is banking on now is you have to get some nice wins in the ACC, which there are plenty to be had. And you need to make it look like the team has made strides. I know the committee doesn't officially have a last 10 games or last 12 games thing that they used to, but I think it's still fair to believe that they look at teams that are peaking more favorably than they are looking at teams that, like, finished sluggishly or, you know, just didn't look any different at the end of the year than they did at any other time. At least you hope. I mean, maybe they don't. Like, there's a chance that they just totally dismiss that, but I would think naturally you want to have, like, some idea of which teams are playing the best at the end of the year, especially a team like this, which, you know, the argument is you're now kind of going into, like, beyond the bot scores and whatnot, and you're saying this is a team that added, like, a bunch of key pieces from last year's team. It's basically completely overhauled. They had to learn the system, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of, it's tough to make that argument when a lot of other teams don't get the same benefit of the doubt, but it's also a named program. If you can look good in ACC play, there's a fair chance that it will mitigate losing to St. John's, who actually, St. John's hasn't looked that awful since beating us, which is nice, and Georgetown, which is middling.
Right now.
Yeah, they've actually played pretty well. UConn's still a problem. UConn's looked terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if St. John's wants to not be the worst loss in the world, that'd be good. If BC wants to, like, be competitive, that'd be good. I don't really care if UConn gets the shit together or not, because it's still funny that they're bad, even if they beat us. But, like, yeah, then you could start, like, clawing your way back to respectability. It's just a lot. I'm still skeptical just because I watched this team lose, not just to BC and St. John's, but lose by, like, 30 points to those two teams. So... there's a lot of big games, as we said, in the next couple weeks, and if you go 3-1 or 4-0, then, and you look convincing in winning a couple of those games, and it's not like, you know, you're hitting buzzer beaters to do it, and even so, that's a big upgrade from where we were, but then I'll start to get excited again, and I'll say, all right, we're back in this, and hopefully it's not just, you know, in enough time to be let down at the end of the season. But after last year, we snuck in and we saw what happened. So I think Syracuse fans don't have too much of room to complain right now about whatever happens. But we're so far out of, you know, getting stewed out of the tournament or sneaking into the tournament or whatever that, you know, we have to get bare first. So we'll see. I'm open to it. It's not out of the realm of possibility. It's just we've taken one step towards it, not like... jumped back in the midst yet. So hopefully we get back in the midst and then we can actually have these heated arguments and start gnashing teeth over whatever Doug Gottlieb says and whatever. Like we're working our way back to that. Our normal state of annoyingness and whatever else Syracuse fans are to everyone else outside of the fan base.
Which is fine. But yeah, I don't want anyone to sit here and think that, you know, you and me are suddenly talking ourselves right back into the tournament. Far, far from it. This is a long, as we said, you know, game-by-game process. We're just kind of hypothetically talking about what happens if a couple things start going the right way and what it would take to get back into the conversation. I know I'm just panning around the scoreboard here for the night of college basketball. For those who didn't look at the scores last night, and for those listening, you'll be listening on Thursday. Butler beat Nova. That was interesting. Pitt and UVA are tied-ish right now. Notre Dame's smoking Louisville right now. NC State is destroying Va Tech. Baylor and ISU were tightly locked. Yeah, so this is, I feel like if you look at the tapestry of what's happened in college basketball this year, I just think there's way too much goofiness on a night-to-night basis, even more so than normal, to really start extrapolating this SU result out until we get a little bit further down the road.
Yeah, I mean, especially in the ACC so far, but overall, like, college basketball, there is no truly dominant team. Like, Nova lost tonight. Nova's probably looked the closest, and they've lost tonight. Duke's kind of a mess, just on and off the court, and, you know, the whole Grayson Allen thing happened today. Hope Coach Tay is healthy. I hope Coach Tay also learns that, like, when there's national outrage about your player being a punk over and over and over again.
Well, the word
like,
indefinitely.
Yeah, indefinite, and by indefinite we mean one game, and we strip him of a, you know, made up title that we gave him because we like him. Like, oh, cool, great, thanks. Yeah. So like, Duke's been, you know, all over the place. Kentucky just lost to this Louisville team, and now Louisville has, you know, they're getting bombarded by Notre Dame right now, and they lost pretty badly. Who did they lose to the other day? That was kind of surprising. Was it Georgia Tech? No, they beat UNC. Louisville had, like, a weird loss the other day.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, stuff is all over the place. The ACC is, like, especially, like, the powers have all, pretty much all lost already in conference, the normal powers. So, college basketball, it's just, like, a crazy year. Kentucky's...
Virginia. That's fine.
Oh, yeah, they lost to Virginia. That was actually a fine loss. And they lost to Baylor, who was, like, number two in the country. They lost to Virginia, and it was, like, one of those games where... It was 61-53, but it, like, wasn't actually that close because they, like, could not score at all, like, when it mattered. Because Virginia's defense just confounds them all the time. And then they beat Indiana. But Indiana's also, like, who knows? Indiana's one of the most talented teams in the country, and they have weird performance after weird performance. So I think it'll have to make for a really fun tournament this year. Hopefully Syracuse is a part of it. But if not, like, the tournament this year should be absolutely wacky.
I would agree. I think it's a good place to jump into halftime. So, Dan, I know we took a week off last week. What were you drinking over the holiday break?
A lot of good stuff. Just the highlights. Had the Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from Anchor, which is delicious, really good holiday-inspired one that you should be able to find fairly... I know you didn't definitely find it out there.
Oh, yeah.
But Anchor is, you know, pretty... easily to find. Also had Soul Style from Dream Flash, which is delicious. I had Empire. Yeah, it's really good. It's super, super citrusy, but like it works really well. The Sweet Fire from Empire, which I wasn't like in love with, but it was really interesting. It has like sweetness and then it's also like some like pepper notes, and it's definitely interesting. And it's, you know, it's cool to see Empire out in the wild, especially not their like not just the Empire Pale Ale and the normal stuff. Like, they're starting to get some of their more interesting ones out down this way. Had some Two Hearted, as I do. Had some Racer 5, which I hadn't had in a while, which is great.
Yeah, Racer.
Had some Session Black Lager from Full Sail, which it's really grown on me, even though it's, like, way outside of, like, what I normally like. And then, right now, I'm drinking a Lost Nation Ghosts brewery up in Vermont. And also, speaking of Vermont, have a nice pack of Hetty Topper in my fridge, which damn one you. Of which I had the other night. So, happy New Year to me, courtesy of a friend from Vermont who brought it down a couple days ago. So that was very nice. I don't know. I feel like we shouldn't save, like, there's three more left. I feel like you shouldn't save them for, like, special because you want to have it, like, fresh.
Yeah.
But it's also not something I want to just, like, burn through. So it's kind of like a weird, we're trying to strike that balance, which will be tricky.
Yeah, that is always tough with IPAs. I find I end up just burning through them, and like, not like just pounding them for the sake of like getting drunk. That's not going to happen. But yeah, I usually just have them skip everything else in line, since I do have an extensive usually beer fridge list that I'm kind of prioritizing because I don't want to stack up a certain style at the end.
Or that makes sense.
Yeah, or create the issue I have right now where everything in there is like a 15% plus like bourbon barrel aged something.
Yeah, it's also just like I don't have access to it all the time, so it's just like, do I want to have this tonight or do I want to wait till like the weekend? Or
right.
or wait for watching a game or what. So we'll figure that out. It's not a big problem. I think I will survive figuring out when to drink my Heady Topper.
Indeed. All right. On my end, what have I had? I was in North Carolina, so I had a bunch of different things. Had Foothills Hopium. It's their always available IPA. I didn't have any Jade. I don't know if Jade was just not in season, but I didn't have any of that. I did have some Edmund Fitzgerald from Great Lakes Brewing. It's a really good porter from them. I actually had it from a year ago, and I had it at my parents' house, and they never drank it. So got to revisit that. Also sent them a bottle of Black Tuesday that I had for us all to share on Christmas. That was excellent as always. Had a Duck Rabbit Milk Stout, another local option. Had a Pernicious IPA from Wicked Weed, and I think actually one of the most underrated IPAs on the market, in my opinion. Had a bunch of other Wicked Weed things. Had Oblivion. It's a Flanders that was really well, nice, and balanced. Had a Wicked Weed Genesis. I had Silencio, all sours from them. Of course, I had to have some Westbrook Goza. It's my favorite Goza. Available.
It's so good.
Just the best. And like the fact is down there, it's just like so readily available at any like bottle shop.
I'm going to be down there a bunch in the next couple months. I'm going down in February to visit friends, and then I have weddings in April and May. So I'm going to load up on as much Westbrook as I can.
Where at? All in the RDU area? Or?
What now? Well, I'll be in the Columbia, and then I'll be in Charleston, and then I'll be in Charlotte.
If you're
slash Winston-Salem. So
when you're in Charlotte, go to or at least try to find Fontaflora's beers. They're all like wild ales and things like that.
Ooh, yeah, I will definitely keep an eye out. It's for a wedding, so I don't know how much like time in actual Charlotte we'll get to because it's like a little outside. But hopefully, I will give it a shot.
Fair enough. What else did I have? Grab a 6-pack of Sweetwater IPA because I was just trying to get through a party that my parents were at, and I felt that I really didn't. I think that they were having, what the hell were they making? Like Tom Collins and like hot toddies, and I didn't want any part of that. I don't really drink like sugary crap or anything, so I'm not a big mixed drink fan, except for with gin and diet tonic. So I went with beer instead. So I had the Sweetwater IPA. I also had, I don't know if you've ever had it. Full Steam down in North Carolina. They're Southern Basil Saison. Yep. Very, very
I don't good. Know that I've had that.
Yeah. Southern Basil.
Is it basil flavor?
Yes. But like, interesting. Just subtle enough, and like it works well with the Saison. Like, I don't know another beer style it would really pair well with.
Maybe a sour or a gosa, but I'm not sure. It depends. Like, basil's kind of like aggressive if you use too much of it in anything, so
right.
I think they just have to hit the balance right.
And they definitely did. Yeah, I enjoyed that one. What else did I have? Then on the way out of town, I had from Wicked Weed, Labonte with Pear. I had Hop Cocoa from them. And then when I got back, Beechwood started doing 6-packs of their Cream Ale Foam Top. So had some of that. And then had an Amalgamator on New Year's Eve. And now I'm saving all my drinking for my birthday's next week, but doing some birthday drinking down in Anaheim on Saturday, doing a Brewery Tarot, their sour beer facility, and then doing Bottle Logic and Noble. So I'll be sharing plenty come next week.
Very nice.
Indeed. Okay. So I feel like we talked enough about Syracuse here. That was probably far past the usual quota, let's be honest.
More than we thought we would, honestly. We spoke earlier, like in the week, about what we were going to talk about. I don't even know that Syracuse is on the agenda. Like, I figured we'd mention what happened tonight, but didn't expect them to win by 15.
No. Yeah, it was definitively off the agenda.
We're like, go, and Syracuse did a thing.
Syracuse did a thing. It was bad. But yeah, no, they did a thing that was good. That was great. So I think first, let's just talk about the semifinal games. They were bad. And that's the problem that I'm noticing, and I think other people have noticed too. Them being on New Year's Eve doesn't really help, but 5 of the 6 semifinal games have been crap. since the playoffs started, and that's not really like a thing we should be thrilled about long term, especially like for, you know, you and me and a lot of other people who are in the just do four, what's the big deal crowd. Yeah, these games have been bad. That said, a lot of the BCS title games were also bad.
I also, it's way too small of a sample size to just say, like, the playoff is making bad games. That just doesn't make sense.
Right.
I think, yeah, it's just been a weird, like, it's been a weird thing. There have been some, like, weird matchups. The one good game in the semifinals ever has been Ohio State-Alabama, which, honestly, it was, like, a fun game, but, like, Ohio State controlled that game the whole time. It wasn't like Alabama was, like, all that close to beating them. It was Alabama. Right, it wasn't that close. It was exciting because Alabama lost unexpectedly, and Ohio State came out of nowhere to do it with a backup quarterback. But yeah, it wasn't even like that. Wasn't even like a thriller. It wasn't like the Rose Bowl the other night, which was so good.
We're gonna get to that. I think the issue is with these matchups is that they've either been A with Bama, always a problem, or B, the matchup has been the other team's kryptonite. I mean, look at Florida State, Oregon. Case in point, like,
yep.
Florida State hung out by the skin of its teeth that entire season, and then they faced a team that was just built for speed and could run them right off the field. They did, especially the fact that Oregon really didn't have to travel. I mean, they had to travel, but they didn't have to travel nearly as far as Florida State did. They had basically what was a home crowd. FSU traveled well, but not well enough to outnumber the amount of Ducks that were there. I was there, so can attest firsthand what that game was like. You look at a lot of these other games. I mean, Bama obviously being a factor, Michigan State, there's no way that was happening. Same thing, there's the talent gap between, you know, your Alabamas and Ohio States of the world, and, you know, these quote-unquote interlopers here, and, you know, teaser, I have an article going up about that tomorrow over on The Comeback, kind of talking about just the talent disparity and how these teams... like your Oregon's and Michigan State's and Washington's of the world. I mean, this is pretty much what the playoff is doing, is it's tearing out the college football world further, and it's really showing kind of the class system of, here are your elite recruiters, that's going to be three of the four every year. Here's that team that gets not lucky, but finds a way with an easier schedule. Sometimes luck just to get on through, and they'll usually be your four seed and have the misfortune of facing Bama. And then here's your group of five champ, and then here's everybody else. And I feel like, you know, we had that, there was a conversation last week from, you know, group of five commissioners about, maybe having their own miniature playoff, and something I actually wrote about like a week before that conversation turned into reality. I think the separation that we've all kind of been expecting between power of conferences and everybody else might happen sooner rather than later at this point.
It was actually Northern Illinois' Sean Frazier, who Syracuse fans will remember as a maybe candidate for the AD job, even though he denied it flatly, who brought that up. And, like, it seems like this real, like, hard divide between, like, just being a realist about where the group of five is, like, even if it's still FBS, it's not the same. Like, they're not in the same level as the power of five. It seems like a good chunk of them realize that and are cool. I'm not cool with that, but, like, acknowledge it and want to kind of do the best of what they can. And then it seems like people like Mike Resto from the AAC are like, no, we're going to compete with everyone else. Like, well, you're not, though. Like, you can say that, and, you know, if Houston run the table this year, Houston probably would have gotten in.
But Houston's also the only team talented enough to have a chance to run the table with that schedule. Nobody else in the group of five would be able to stack themselves up against two power conference opponents and have any shot in hell of beating both of them.
And they lost three times. So, against the not power conference opponents. So, like, even a team like Houston, which had really good top-end talent and really good coaching, didn't have, like, it might have Ed Oliver, who's a monster and was one of the best players in college football this year, which is scary because he's a freshman, and Tom Herman got him at Houston. But they don't have, you know, Alabama has, like, six Ed Olivers. Like, they have, you know, half their defense is of that caliber. and they have that depth. Like, Houston, you could have like, a game breaker like that, and we saw him against Louisville. He ate their lineup and just, like, spit them out. But so did LSU, and it wasn't just one guy. It was just of everyone. Isn't that depth where, you know, if a couple guys have a bad game, you're going to overcome it because you just have overwhelming talent at Houston. You might be able to get up for the Oklahoma game and win, but you're not going to be able to get up for every single American game and run the table, and then, you know, it just didn't work out. And I don't know, that was probably the best shot that the five had going forward, I think. You know, maybe Boise State will rise back up and prove us wrong, and there are years where Boise State, like, was one of the top four teams in the BCS, but it wasn't, like, all the time. It was, like, once.
Right. And their recruiting never really... It never got above the 40th-ish range. I mean, Houston's kind of right in that. And you brought up a good point, too, with Louisville. That goes back to the point I was making earlier about even within the Power Five, even within the best schools, there's still a tiered system. Like, you look at just the talent that LSU has and the talent that Louisville has. Louisville was able to do a lot of damage to good teams, but they also lost a bunch of times to not as great teams, and they also got smoked by a much more talented team than in LSU. So I think, you know, over the course of the season, this isn't an indictment on Louisville or their program or recruiting. It's just pointing out that there's still a very large talent gap between what Louisville's doing and their rising program and what other programs have done over the course of the last, you know, 2 to 5 to 7 years. And establish themselves as recruiting powers and much more talented teams. I mean, Louisville did, in essence, burn out over the course of this season. And similarly to Houston, I mean, which is interesting to see the parallels with those two programs. But I think Houston is kind of Louisville light in some ways, mimicking a lot of the things that Louisville did over the course of the last 20 years to get to where they are now. And they still have a ways to go. Houston, on the other hand, kind of tried to, you know, do it all in a five-year stretch. And I feel like that's where they have suffered from some burnout as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just there aren't very many teams that can sustain the amount of talent and the amount of in light of the turnover that you have naturally in college football. Alabama, they've had, what, 7 straight number one recruiting classes? Like,
right.
They can do it because they have a team, like, where even if you miss on a recruit or 5, like, you have 20 that are really good. And they put in however many guys in the NFL. Ohio State is almost there, but even them, we saw their problems very glaringly this weekend. But they're recruiting a similar level, and they're not quite where Alabama is. And then you have, you know, Florida State's around there, LSU's around there, USC is around there. But Alabama's so far ahead that they're like, they basically deserve their own tier, honestly. And then it's that group of, like, Ohio State, USC, LSU, some years Ole Miss, but I don't know if that'll last, considering everything that they're about to go through.
That's okay.
I think Clemson will probably keep on climbing.
As long as Dabo's Clemson's there,
now proven that they are. As long as Dabo's there, which I think is as long as Saban's at Alabama.
Agreed.
As much as, like, there are reports that, you know, Dabo's happy with his own kingdom or whatever. I think that was the word someone used. I think it's very hard, and we're going way off track, but I think it's very hard to believe that if Saban retires in 5 years, that Dabo won't go to his alma mater. But, you know, if he doesn't, more power to him. But, like, they're a rising power, clearly, but they don't recruit nearly at the same level as Alabama. They're where they are this year because they have a standout quarterback, and they have a very established system and a lot of veterans. I guess, but, you know, Alabama still has more, and it's because they have so many just ultra talents every year that guys aren't being thrust into playing as true freshmen unless they're unbelievable. They happen to have one at quarterback, but the whole program is just such a machine that it's hard for anyone to realistically compete, and it's the divide's getting bigger. Like, Alabama hasn't lost this year. Like, last year, you know, they've gotten surprised a couple times along the way, and they had, like, the weird Oklahoma game in the bowl a couple years ago. Now, like, they just roll so hard through everything, and they have such talent, especially on defense, that they're outpacing people by more every year, which is insane and terrifying.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it so much. I mean, I'm still rooting for them against Clemson because, obviously, but at the same time, like, I really just hate this whole Alabama thing because, like, it's not like any other program. Like, even Ohio State, even Florida, even LSU, like, they can't replicate this. And you know, they talked about it in Shutdown Fullcast, like, a couple weeks ago, but, like, this is not replicable. It doesn't matter how many, you know, Saban assistants you hire. It doesn't matter. Like, this isn't something that you can take and put somewhere else. This is Saban at Alabama. It's a perfect storm of what can and will happen when, you know, you put a ridiculous personality and who understands how to run not just any organization, but this organization to its optimum capacity. This, again, would not work anywhere else. And I think that, as much as I hate seeing Alabama dominate like this, that needs to be appreciated for what it is, that Saban and Alabama are a match made in heaven for them, but hell for everybody else, because this is a death machine that college football has never and will never see again.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, whether it's good or bad for the sport or what. I mean, it's kind of like the UConn women's basketball to, like, a little bit of lesser degree. But I will say that, like, having been more focused on, like, national stuff, I've grown to appreciate, like, what Nick Saban does. And it's not like I love it. Like, I enjoy when Alabama does get knocked off. It makes things interesting. But, like, it's impossible not to appreciate just someone finding a code in the matrix and building what is essentially a perfect program at this point. And it's hard to think of it as anything else. Like, it's just unimpeachable. I've grown, like, similar begrudging feelings about, and this isn't even, he's not even at the same level, but what Calipari, honestly. And it's totally different because, you know, where Saban's reloading on, you know, super senior, like, it's just because of the difference in football and basketball, but seniors, like, the fact that Calipari could make a competitive team virtually every year out of all freshmen is crazy to me. And, you know, once you get past, like, all the cheating allegations and whatnot that everyone screams about, and I'm sure are at least somewhat legitimate, it's still impressive. And it's just, you know, once you get by, like, hating the programs that win all the time because they win all the time, like, you do have to, like, at least acknowledge how crazy it is that they do it the way they do. And there's no one like that, like Saban in Alabama. Like, especially with, like, more and more teams trying to invest in college football, it's not like people are running away from the sport. Like, schools, aside from Idaho, schools want to be part of the FBS and are pumping resources into it. You know, they might be crying poverty later when we know that that's all false, but they're all trying to jump up every year, and Alabama is just holding everyone off and gaining distance from the rest of the pack. It's crazy.
Yeah, I we'll see how long this lasts. I don't really see it ending. Saban's found a way to get people to buy in, and that's not an easy situation, you know, when you're someone in your, when you're, so you're a rich white man in your 50s and 60s trying to sell yourself to a lot of underprivileged inner city kids, many of whom are African Americans. It's not that becomes a thing you can't overcome, but it definitely doesn't make your job any easier because you are from different worlds and different backgrounds. And I think Nick Saban's from a different world and background than you and I at this point. I mean, he's a multi-millionaire who's been a multi-millionaire for years in Alabama. You and I are from the Northeast and middle-class roots and all that. I do think that he's found a common language and a common, like, Nick Saban would be a great politician, if that makes sense, because he's incredibly relatable. And I'm not going to turn this into a political conversation, I swear. But Nick Saban has found a way to be, like, kind of the common denominator for everybody in his sphere of influence. And that goes for the players, the boosters, the fans, the alums, many of whom are not, you know, in the same kind of situation that the Tuscaloosa and a lot of the areas around that in Alabama are. He's somehow found the common ground that so few can in any profession.
I think because he doesn't come across as, like, a caricature. Right. I think, like, Nick Saban, he's, like, grouchy, but he's not Belichick. Like, he just seems like he is who he is, like, but not playing up to whatever people say about him, and he just wins, and that's, at the end of the day, like, that is what is most important, and it does seem like he's probably pretty ruthlessly honest with people, and when you have, what, 4 or 5 national championships under your belt, like, you can do that. I eventually he'll, you know, I don't know if he'll lose his touch or he'll just get disinterested to the NFL or whatever, Something, whether it's time or another force, will cause the end of the Nick Saban Alabama regime. But as long as he's there, it's just hard to see this thing stop, you know, stop rolling, because it's just been, even the years he hasn't won, like, it's been like a couple minor flaws, and if in another, you know, another one of the alternate universes, like, Alabama very easily could have won that year. Like, it's not like there's been a year where Alabama's taken a step back. The first year he was there, they weren't great. They went, what, like, I think they went 7-6 or something. I think they actually went, like, 8-6. I think they had a Hawaii plus one game or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, since then, they've just been the national champion or a strong contender to win the national championship, and something bad happened once. It just, there haven't been, I think they had one year where they lost, like, a couple games, yeah, and were out of it. And they went to, like, I think there was one, like, random year in the mid-2000s, but I could be, I don't even remember. Like, it's crazy that every single year they are pretty much in the conversation for the title most of the year. And they've been in the playoff every year since we've had that. So, even, like, one bad loss to Ohio State, but then they go back the next year and they win it. And this year, I mean, Clemson probably is the best shot of anyone, but I don't feel comfortable saying that Clemson's going to win that game at all.
Nope, because Clemson lost to Pitt.
Clemson did lose to Pitt, yes.
That's the thing that happened. And they almost lost NC State. And these are, again, these are things that Alabama would not do.
Yeah, and I will say that Clemson looked like, I mean, the fact they beat Ohio State by, what, 31 the other night?
I mean, I'm already seeing the hate mail in my inbox. Clemson dismantled Ohio State. Dabo.
Clemson's a very high ceiling, yeah, for sure.
High ceiling. Dabo completely outgamed Urban Meyer, which is not an easy thing to do, but Dabo's done it twice now. Brent Venables put together, again, and it's funny because I saw conversations going on about why Venables hadn't left, something that you and I were talking about a couple months ago. And that is, he's waiting for Bill Snyder to leave over at Kansas State. But, like, what Venables has been able to do, I mean, what, yesterday or today was, like, the, what was it, 5-year anniversary of that, like, disaster of an Orange Bowl? Like, Venables showed up after that, and what he's done since then is turned Clemson's defense into the, like, kind of the, like, you know, gold standard non-Alabama division for what a defense can do to an opponent.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been so good. And Clemson, like, I don't know. I don't expect it to be as close as last year's game where Clemson outplayed Alabama, like, honestly, and probably should have won. I think Alabama's better. I think this is the best Alabama team under Nick Saban, which is horrifying.
This is the best team ever. I'm going to be honest.
It might be, and they're not, like, they're not perfect. Like, that offense could be better. But that defense is so good.
Like, nobody was really close to this. Like, that's a terrifying. Like, nobody's really close to this team this year. Like, Ole Miss is the only one that, like, even had a shot.
And that's because Ole Miss has, like, if anyone's like the Rock to Alabama or scissors, it's Ole Miss for whatever reason, and Alabama still beat them. Like, Chad Kelly is, like, just has that just enough Johnny Manziel in him where he's just provides a major issue for Alabama. And they still fell short, and then their season fell apart. It's not great to think about, especially, like, and Alabama will lose a lot on defense this year to the NFL draft, but, and you have Jalen Hurts coming back, and you have Bo Scarborough coming back, and you have Najee Harris coming to the team, and you have everything else. Like, it's, and you assume Sark will be roughly as good as Kiffin has been. It's just, it's a lot. It's a lot to overcome.
Damn it, Bama. Okay, so one other thing that I wanted to backtrack on, because you said earlier, I didn't read that Frazier was the one who put that forward for NIU.
Yes, he was the one who was like, he seems to be the most outspoken person in favor of the G5 playoff.
You know, it's funny. There is one AD in college who follows me. And you know who that AD is?
Is it Sean Frazier?
It is Sean Frazier.
That's pretty funny.
Could you imagine if I'm the one who created the G5 playoff? Take that, Larry Culpepper, you hack.
I mean, we did spur USC to making and winning the Rose Bowl.
Oh, yeah, we said we were going to talk about that. Let's end the podcast with that.
So, I don't know if this is this a mea culpa, or is this a, no, like, this you're welcome, USC?
Yeah. let's take a trip in the Wayback Machine to late September. We were already imagining how and when Clay Helton would get fired on a tarmac, and USC was 1-3.
USC was 1-3, And we literally went game by game on their schedule, I think. And, like, yeah. And I don't know if you...
Like, we're paid to talk about college sports. Like, and we said that USC was going to go 3-9.
I think I might have said, you know, they might find a way to, like, 5 wins. If you guys haven't been keeping track, USC did not lose after whatever we put that podcast out. They ran the table, beat Washington, won the well, they didn't win the Pac-12 as Washington did, but they beat Washington handily, and then they won just an unbelievable Rose Bowl game between two teams that most people listening to this and reporting this don't really want to root for. But, like, that was one of those games where, like, you don't even care. It was just so good.
I'll root for fun USC any day. Like, as a young college football fan in the late 90s, early 2000s, like, after I was done watching Syracuse, like, I was riding with the Trojans, like, hard.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I really don't inherently have anything wrong with USC. I, like...
No, my in-laws do, just, because they're UCLA fans, but... And...
Right. Penn State, I could never see win again. And I will still, like, quietly enjoy watching Trace McSorley throw bombs and Saquon Barkley do what Saquon Barkley does. But I will take how things turned out, because holy crap, that game was awesome.
That final throw that Darnold made was...
He's so good.
Like, I mean, and even Herb Street was saying during the broadcast, like, how in God's name do you put that ball where he put it? Because they showed the field cam from about where Darnold would have been. There's no goddamn way... That you thread that needle and know that ball is getting to where it needs to go. Impossible.
Yeah, especially after avoiding the rush the way he did. Like, he maneuvers the pocket so well. He throws just an absolutely gorgeous football. He's just impressive. Like, he's just an impressive quarterback to watch. He made some awesome throws. He wasn't, like, throwing, like, these ridiculous, like, Aaron Rodgers bombs or anything, but he just, in terms of, like, makeable college throws, hitting... you know, out routes on the sideline, putting things right when they need to be. Just really impressive. So, I mean, I've seen him play, you know, a number of games now, but it's so much fun to watch a quarterback deal like that, and I cannot wait to see him next year, especially because, like, USC will lose a bunch of talent this year, too, but they're one of those teams that, you know, not to an Alabama level.
They'll be number two.
Okay, people will not be able to wait to vote for them to be number, like, two or three in the polls. Like, you do not have to pull anyone's arm to vote USC, probably even a little higher than they should be.
No. I'll buy in right now my top five. I don't even need the national championship game. Bama, USC, probably Penn State, Florida State,
yeah,
and Michigan.
Alabama, obviously. USC will definitely be in there. I'm buying Penn State because they bring back so much. I think Ohio State will be in the mix. Barrett's back, and they're really, like, they were the youngest team in the country this year. Right. Fifth, I don't know. Who else did you have in there?
Florida State.
Oh, that's a good one. I can see that. I think Clemson will take a step back.
The schedule's always there for Florida State. Like, I mean, and that's why, like, those...
You know, we're missing Oklahoma.
Is Baker Mayfield coming back, or is he done?
Yep. Huh. No, he announced it like a month ago. Oh, he's coming back.
Interesting. Yeah, I could see Oklahoma. I think Texas is probably going to be a top 10 team to start the season. I think that.
Oh, I don't think they will be. I think they'll be talented.
I don't think that they should be. I think they'll be knocking on the door. I think they'll be hanging somewhere around like 10, 11, just because everyone's, like, you know, drunk on Tom Herman and goes, think about what this team could have done if Charlie Strong actually gave a shit the second half of the season. And so, I mean, you know how it goes. Texas is like, I mean, Texas is, for the most part, like, you know, 1B in term, like, after USC, in terms of how can we irrationally overrate this team going into the season that no matter what happens, we'll still be pissed off.
Yeah, I don't buy that they'll be that highly ranked initially, but I think the minute they win a big game, people will go nuts. Like they did this year. They beat Notre Dame, and that was a really fun game between two powers.
Joe Tess, why did you do that? Texas is back.
That game was so much more fun than we thought. Like, Notre Dame was going to be good. I had Notre Dame in my playoff entering the year.
Hell no.
I really killed it. I don't know if you guys realize. I'm still trying to find my college football playoff while we're winding down here. If I can find my preseason prediction.
I think mine was Bama, Michigan, Florida State, and was it Stanford? It's always Stanford.
I know Notre Dame was in there, and I know Alabama was in there, and I think I actually had Alabama-Clemson, which wasn't, like, the hottest take until you realize that, like, a rematch had never happened in the entirety of, you know, the world of college football championship games happening, which isn't that long. It goes back to, like, 92. Yeah. But
we've been alive for it all. But
well, true. But it's still weird that it's never happened. And it's only happened in basketball once in the history of NCAA tournament. Well, it was Cincinnati, Ohio State.
It's the nature of the sport. I mean, you're replacing at least a quarter of your roster every year. It's not like the playoffs where you can return. You can just bring back everybody with playoff experience.
That's true.
That was fun. All right. I think that was this has been a fun podcast, Dan. I think look how much better things are after a win.
Yes, hopefully we get to do some more of these post-win podcast things.
Yeah, these are fun. I forgot what these were like.
Literally, probably our first positive podcast in like a month and a half.
Yeah, because when you think,
especially because we missed a bunch of weeks because of stupid stuff.
Yeah, we missed a bunch of weeks of technical difficulties. We're not ones to really get like super riled up about like BS non-conference wins against bad teams. So yeah, we really haven't been this happy since like the Virginia Tech game in football, that's been a while.
Yes. Ugh. Good to be back.
Good to be
positivity.
Back.
2017.
Yeah. Okay.
Ignoring the BC thing.
Ignoring the BC thing and a bunch of other things not related to Syracuse sports.
Yes.
Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. You've been listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk. If you listen to us on another service, rate, review, and subscribe there too. And Dan, thanks for joining. Much appreciated, as always.
Yes, happy to be here. Happy to be here talking about a win. Hopefully we will have at least another win to talk about next week.
Indeed, indeed. Go Orange.
Go Orange.